I am thrilled to be sitting here today with actually one of my best buddies in the world, Jeffrey C. Hawkins. We have been roommates. We have worked together at the Guthrie, at the Great Lakes Theater Festival. We have done readings together, many, many, many projects together. Again, one of my best buddies. Thrilled to have him here today. This guy just works everywhere. He's a company member at TACT. He's a company member at Great Lakes Theater Festival and the Idaho Shakespeare Festival. He's been in tons and tons of films. He has been in, he just did Walking with the Enemy, Masters of Sex, Blue Bloods, Royal Pain, Smash, A Gifted Man, and the list goes on and on and on. This guy works his ass off. One of the most talented guys I know, one of the most hardworking, one of the most likable guys, awesome, awesome friend and collaborator and colleague, Jeffrey Hawkins. Welcome. How's that for an intro?
That is a hell of an intro, and I'll sign the check over to you tonight. No, that's a very nice intro. Maybe a little too ecstatic, but it was good. No, it was good. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, what's your secret to success?
My secret to success?
No, really, come on. You're always, always working. You're always auditioning. Everybody loves you. You have a great life. You're always, I mean, you've done over 100 plays. You're living the dream. This is incredible.
I am very lucky. I'm very thankful. I tell you what the secret is. No. I tell you what helps. Being a 6-foot white guy. That helps.
Oh.
That helps. Let me tell you. There are a lot of roles out there for people that look like me. So that helps.
Wait a minute. You're white?
Acting. I have to be real that I'm not a short black woman, you know, so there are a lot more roles for me. So
I didn't know we were going to get this controversial on the podcast this fine evening.
I mean, if you look at the breakdowns, you look at what's on TV, I'm not saying this is right.
Do you look at the breakdowns?
Yeah.
You're going to jail right now. Just give me your license. You're going to jail, pal. That's infringement of copyright.
I don't mean those breakdowns.
Oh, okay.
But if you look at TV, you know, I'm not saying this is the way it ought to be. I'm saying the way it tends to be. Tends to be a lot of parts for people like you and me, you know. So I can squeeze my way into plays more often than not. And there are usually parts for me on TV more often than not. So, you know, I'm not going to fool myself and think I'm super talented. It also helps to have, you know, 6 feet underneath me and being a white guy. It helps. I'm not saying it's the way it should be. I'm just saying that's the way it tends to be.
I hear you. Okay. Yeah. Hey, who's your agent?
My agent, I'm with The Mine. David Krasner, Paola Poeta. Good people over there. Yeah.
Do you guys have a good relationship?
We do. Yeah. I love my agents. I got to say, man, I really love them. We just had Snowmageddon here 2013 in New York City, and everyone was buried. And my agent, God love him, man, he dug himself out of the snow and drove down to Wilmington, Delaware, where I was just doing a play, and came to see me.
That's awesome. Jeffrey was just doing Boeing Boeing at the Delaware Theater Company, by the way. His next gig is at the Cincinnati Playhouse, followed by the Tahoe Shakespeare Festival and Great Lakes Theater Festival this summer. So that's great. Your agent went all the way to Delaware to see you in Boeing Boeing?
Yeah, super
cool.
That's
awesome.
And I found out that he doesn't even like the play. I found out after the show, he doesn't even care for the play. Somehow we got our lines crossed in an email. I thought it deliberately said in the email, I love Boeing Boeing. I think what he forgot to write is, I don't love Boeing Boeing. Either way, he was there and, you know, as he said, hey, I see plays I like all the time. I see plays I don't like all the time. I don't care. I'm here for you. And that's cool. You know, he's a good guy. He's really sweet and smiling, has sparkly eyes, and I love him. You know, he's a great guy.
So how did you get into this? Like, take me back. Like, where, why, when, where did it start?
As a young boy. I don't know. You know, I grew up a kid that, you know, I was into sports. I played tons of soccer. I did 13 years of soccer. I played baseball. I played football. And I didn't play football very well, but I played football. I loved it, you know.
How could you be a sports guy and not be in my fantasy baseball league?
I mean, was in
it's
your
ridiculous.
Fantasy.
What is your problem?
My problem is you dominate the league, and I should just write you a check right now instead of getting invested for a whole 9 months of the year.
That's a thought. Okay, go ahead. Go back.
Yeah, so, you know, I was always kind of a sports guy. I never really, you know, I didn't know as a kid I wanted to be an actor. I knew as a kid I wanted to be a Jedi. so I guess I was influenced by films and swashbuckling. And, you know, I loved the Three Musketeers as a kid. I loved Star Wars as a kid.
That's the first thing I saw you in. I went to the Idaho Shakespeare Festival back in 1998 or 9, it must have been. And I saw you in a production of Three Musketeers at the Idaho Shakespeare Festival.
That's right, yeah.
You were quite good, I have to say.
Well, thank you very much. That was an exhausting role, man. I had 13 sword fights in that show.
D'Artagnan, right?
D'Artagnan, yeah. But it was a blast, you know, because, like, D'Artagnan is kind of like a Jedi Knight. Anyway, it was a blast. But yeah, you know, I was a sports kid, and even in high school, I was a sports guy in high school, so a student government guy in high school, blah, blah, blah. But I kept getting drawn into these plays, meaning that, you know, you're in high school, so grades count. And if the guy playing, you know, the part X in play Z, if the grades didn't...
I'm losing you a little bit.
I had too many variables. So, like, you know, the guy in the school play, and if his grades weren't good enough, you couldn't be in the school play anymore. Like at a sports team, you'd get kicked off the team. So people get kicked out of the cast because their grades weren't good enough. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, I don't even recall, they asked me to be in the play. I have no idea why. I was not in the drama club or anything like that. But I got sucked into doing the play. I liked it. I had fun. People seemed to enjoy what I did. You know, you have those little high school awards at the end of the year, and I'd win Best Supporting Actor for this role. You know, and like, those things which are, you know, it's nice to get accolades and praise, I guess. But, you know, and that kept happening. I kept getting sucked into a play I didn't audition for. And I ended up having fun, and people responded well to it. I remember one time, this is after I became more and more interested in it, now I was really into it, and we had created this evening of Shakespeare. We picked all the scenes and all the monologues and did everything ourselves. And at the end of the night, somebody I didn't know, I think it was like a family member of someone who came to see their person in the play. I remember this guy said to me, "Man, that was really good. I'd pay to see you act." And, you know, wow. That's kind of a fun idea. But I never planned on doing that. I'm not really sure how I got into it. Although, a kind of wiser old friend of mine, actually, who was one of my first drama teachers, we were talking about this one day, and I was saying, kind of like, you know, we're talking right now, I don't remember how I got into it. But I did, like, when I was in fourth grade, out of nowhere, say to my mom, "I want to take this acting class." I don't remember me saying this, but I know I said it. It was me and then my friend Dennis at the time. We just decided to take this after school acting class that was not really close to our home. We had to drive 20 minutes to get there. I don't know if we saw a flyer or what, but anyway, the two of us got interested in this. I did this little summer acting class, then forgot all about it. Didn't do it again until high school. And I was thinking about this, like, why would I just do that out of nowhere and then drop it for years? And then, like I said, this older, wiser friend of mine said to me, well, when was that? When did you do that? I said, I don't know, it was like fourth grade or something. And she said, "Oh, well, isn't that about the time your father died?" I went, "Oh, shit, I guess it was." My father was a police officer. He was killed in the line of duty. And I think it's entirely possible that that was some kind of outlet for me. Looking back on it now, I don't remember that at the time. I don't think I experienced that at the time. But I think it's entirely possible that theater was for me then, and let's face it, probably is for me now, a great way of expressing that which I would not normally express in a kind of day-to-day life. I mean, theater is useful in that way. Not to say that theater ought to be therapeutic. It's not very fun for the audience that way. But you can't deny that we get to express things on a daily basis that are not normal. We get to express insanity and anger and great passions and great deceptions. And that's a pretty fun way to make a living. And it's probably a fairly healthy way to make a living if you think about it, because we get to get all the shit out, you know, which is why you never hear about actors ever having problems. No, but I mean, it's, yeah, so it makes sense. It probably was then and probably still is very good for me on some psychological, emotional level.
So what drives you crazy? Like, what's a pet peeve of yours about working with certain people or directors, or what's frustrating or what is challenging about certain aspects of this?
Well, I mean, God knows there's plenty of things challenging about this business and this art. And those are, I think, I'm drawing a distinction between them simply because it'd be nice to. But, you know, obviously, it's a tough business. It's competitive. Everybody wants to be an actor, at least on some level. I mean, I don't mean to say that in an arrogant way. I just see that if a rapper cuts an album, the next thing he wants to do is act for some reason. So it's appealing to people on some level, maybe for the reasons I just said, you know, that it's expressive and you get to get, you know, your shit out on the table. But, you know, obviously it's hard. It's competitive. There's a million people that want to do it. In this city alone, God knows how many people are out there to take my role from me. So that's just tough. Financially, it's tough. It's, you know, you're not in this for the money. And God knows that ain't easy, especially when the rest of the world gets more expensive and our paychecks stay the same. So that's a challenge. And artistically, it's always a challenge. It's always a challenge to say what you're saying on stage or, you know, in front of a camera. It's a funny game to tell stories and to tell them effectively and quote-unquote truthfully. I put truthfully in quotes because I don't really know what that means. People say truthfully. You know, like, is Picasso true? You know what I mean?
So when you say you don't know what truthfully means, I mean, I can, as an audience member, I can watch a performance and I can say that was phony. I don't buy it. I don't believe you in these given circumstances.
Right. It's easier to point out that which is bad than to point out that which is good. You know, it's not like in baseball where, like, a home run goes over the wall. Everyone can agree it's a home run.
But there's performances that hit you in the gut. There's performances that you are there, you are connected to, that you are drawn into.
Yeah, but it's so subjective. That which you love, I may cringe at. You know what I mean? Performances that I find hilarious, you don't get at all or don't think is funny at all. You know, my agent that I just said came to see my show, he's not a big fan of Boeing. He's not a big fan of farce. I love farce. I love that stupid shit. I love door slams and trips and falls and things like that. He's not a fan of it. And so it's hard to say because everyone's got a different definition of what was a home run. And that's a funny thing about this.
Well, there's also what is truthful, and then there's what's effective and what tells the story and what gets what the playwright is trying to do across to the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
You can be truthful all you want. You can be on the stage crying and weeping, and it has nothing to do with the story.
Absolutely. I mean, as Oscar Wilde so famously said, you know, all bad poetry is sincere. You know what I mean? You know, I remember getting in arguments with people because sometimes I had the opportunity to teach, like, an apprentice class or something and give feedback. And my feedback would be, I don't think that's very good. You know, and some people would, what are you saying? These are kids. These are students. I said, yeah, but it's important to know when it's good and when it's not. You don't tell the kid who just throws the basketball up in the air that he made a three-pointer. It's important to know it didn't go in. And it's important to encourage them. Say, okay, you're getting closer. It's getting better. But that's not it yet. And I think that's important. I remember I had a terrific opportunity to be directed by Tadashi Suzuki. I did a production of his, and was very lucky to be in Japan rehearsing.
Jeffrey, by the way, went to the PTTP program, got his MFA in Delaware. PTTP stands for...
Professional Theater Training Program.
And that's how you went to go work with Suzuki, right?
Yeah, I had a lucky opportunity because Tadashi Suzuki, his work wasn't terribly well known until a couple of guys who created the program I went to. I think, as I recall, they met him in Germany at an international theater festival.
Is this before the Ann Bogart days or after?
I think it was... before.
Okay.
Well, you know, I don't know,
okay.
To be honest. But they met him there, and they very much wanted to bring his work to the States, and they did. And I know that because I was at an opening night of one of Suzuki's plays in Japan, where he publicly, in front of a full audience, thanked Sandy Robbins.
Head of the Delaware MFA program.
Yeah, and now the artistic director of the Resident Ensemble Players in Newark, Delaware. Suzuki himself thanked him for introducing his work to the West, and we all cracked open barrels of sake and enjoyed an opening night party. But it was very cool. But what I was going to say is, while I was there that summer, they had a play festival, a new directors festival, among these very talented Japanese directors, young directors. But they had this festival over a week or two, at the end of which they were going to award some young Japanese director the winner, and I think there was like a scholarship or some kind of financial bonus at the end of it. At the end of this festival, the judges, the kind of presiding professionals, I imagine Suzuki himself was among them, decided that none of the young director's work was worthy of first place. No one won. No one got first prize. No one got the scholarship money, and no one was awarded that year as a winner because it just wasn't good enough. And that's amazing. That would never happen in this country. In this country, we give awards to everyone.
Memo to the American Theater Wing. A Tony Award for a new play does not have to be given, particularly when there is no new play on Broadway that year.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's amazing. They're demanding a kind of excellence by that way of working. And you know what that means is that those young directors will come back even more resolute, stronger, more prepared next year. And I think that's great. And I don't know, I just like that. I just like that. But you know, I guess the bottom line is that it's tough. It's tough when it is so subjective. And God knows I've got my opinions.
Do you think that you have to be born with an intrinsic amount of talent to begin with, in order to take that talent to the next level? Or do you think that anyone can be taught how to act?
I think both yes and no. I think that there's a reason that we're actors. I think there's a reason we do what we do. I think it's an inherent desire to tell stories. I think in some cases it's a desire to be expressive. It's a desire to be watched. But I think there's something in us that likes telling stories. I also think in certain circumstances you could teach someone to do what we do. Maybe in some kind of non-verbal movement type piece and be quite effective at it. I think you could almost paint by numbers in some cases. But that calls into question timing and when is the next part. You know, some people can tell jokes and some people can't. I'm not very good at telling jokes. You know, I'm just not very good at them. I always end up ruining them. But there's something in that. There's some kind of internal timing. I had a director of mine once say that there's a reason we're not plumbers. And I think what he means by that is that there's just something in us that is either good at this or wants to be good at it.
You've just lost so many of our listeners.
And that's nothing against plumbing. That's nothing against any other tradesman, any other craftsman. You know, but there's a reason that we do what we do, I think.
this randomly came to mind, but before I forget, how can people get a hold of you, whether it be your agent, whether it's the Twitter? Yes, I do call the Twitter. I'm always going to call the Twitter. IMDb, Facebook, whatever you want. How can people get a hold of you should they want to touch base with you?
I am untouchable. Well, I don't know why they want to, but if they wanted to, they can find me on Twitter. I have dumb names attached to myself, so I'm hard to find. But I think on Twitter I am JCHawk19. I think my website is thethingstheplay.wix.com or something like that. That's always easy just to Google me, Jeffrey C. Hawkins, and then you'll find stuff like that. And if you want to talk to my agent, you can go to the mine, MINE, not the mind.
Excellent. Now, before the interview actually started, you said something that was very interesting.
What was that?
And you referred to yourself, you said something like, I'm not an actor, I'm a storyteller. Can you expand on what you meant by that?
Yeah, well, I've always had this theory that, and it's not my theory alone, probably, but it is mine, that if everyone in the theater could just erase that little part, that little title they give right next to their name, that he's not the director, he's the storyteller. I'm not an actor, I'm a storyteller. She's not a costume designer, she's a storyteller. If we all took that to heart, I think audiences would be better served. I think plays would be better served.
So it's less about me and more about what story are we telling, and it's more about the audience. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That if I'm a costume designer, I'm not going to take A Midsummer Night's Dream and put them in fur coats. Why? Because it's a midsummer. So often you see directors and actors that want to do their version of the play.
They want to be noticed. They want to put their stamp on it.
Yeah, they want to be interesting enough to get an agent or something like that. But I feel like plays aren't served very well that way. And I feel like audiences are not served very well that way. I think when everyone's out for the story, I think the theater is viable. And I think the theater is good. And I think often theater is not very good because you have a bunch of interesting people on stage instead of a bunch of people interested in the same thing. It's kind of like the All-Star game. You know, the All-Star game, like the NBA All-Star game. You have the best basketball players on the planet. They're all thrown together for one night. And everyone is out there to show off, to do their best, to do the behind the backs, the off the backboard slam dunks. It's not the best game of basketball you see all season. It's not even the best team all season. Because you have a bunch of egos showing off. And the game is lost. It's interesting on one hand, you get to see things you don't always get to see. But at the end of the night, it's not the best basketball you're watching. And that's why if you had the best all-star team versus the best team, the best team would always win. Because they're out to play the game.
See, that's really interesting because I have indeed noticed about you. I mean, I think you just nailed it. I'm sure you have moments where this isn't the case, but generally speaking, it seems like you don't seem to have a big ego in terms of how you work. You know, people can come up to you and give you a note. You know, director could give you a line reading, and you're not going to, like, have a fit about that. You're going to just take it and move on and say thank you or no thank you or use it. But it's not an insult. It doesn't it's not a big deal. You just go on with your with your day, it seems. Am I right? Am I wrong?
You're right about a lot of that. I don't know if you're right saying I don't have a big ego. But, you know, it's one of those things where, I never think I'm good enough until someone says I'm not good enough. And I'm like, fuck you, I'm better than you. You know? No.
Are you very I'm going to let you answer that question, but are you very confident? I mean, you at least appear that you are. I mean, I've seen you audition, I see you prepare, I've seen you in tons and tons of roles. I never get a hint of a fear or I'm not good enough from you, or do you just not talk about that?
I don't know. I think I'm pretty confident because I think, unfortunately, in what we do, if you're not confident, it's just gross and it just shows up all over yourself. So if I'm not confident, I've at least crushed it to the point where it's hidden really well. I'm old enough now, and I've been in this business for over 20 years. So I'm old enough now to know that, okay, I'll never be the best at this. But I'm also old enough to know now that I'm pretty good at this. You know, so it's a case by case and role by role type thing. Some roles I walk into go, oof, okay, this is going to be tough. This is going to hit me in ways I'm not great at. Some roles fit me like a glove and get out of my way, you know. But, you know, as far as being able to take notes and stuff like that, yeah, you know, I'll take a note from anyone. I really will. I'll take a note from anyone. I'll take a line reading from anyone. I may not always agree with you, but I'll hear it. You know, it's worth listening to. And in the rehearsal room, you know, I'm not saying I'm right all the time. I'm saying I think I'm right all the time. I can be proven wrong, but I think I'm right. But if you can tell me I'm wrong or show me how I'm wrong, great, awesome. You know, because, you know, that's the thing. You know, directors don't have all the answers. They're like actors. They're busy. They, you know, if they're not a good director, they're thinking about their concept of the play instead of the play. And sometimes I get on my high horse about that because I feel like I'm out for the play. I'm not out to please my own psychological journey. I'm out for the play. And sometimes I do butt heads with directors when I feel I'm out for the play and he's not, because that's bad news. The director, in my opinion, the director's only job, his or her only job is to sit there and act as the virgin audience member. Act as the audience member walking in and doesn't know a thing. So they can sit there and say, ah, careful, when you put the teacup down really hard, it seemed like you were angry. Are you angry? Oh, okay, you're not angry. Oh, well, maybe you should put it down differently.
So you don't think that a good director, has to have a strong vision that serves the play? A strong vision has to be a good leader? I mean, it seems like you're describing somebody very, very passive right now.
Well, I think directors should be passive a lot of times. But that's the thing. My vision of directors only works with my vision of actors. You know, if I have a bunch of actors out for the play, the director's job is a lot easier. If there are a bunch of actors out to serve their own psychological means, out to dredge up some biography they created backstage, then we need a strong director to go, what the hell are you doing? But that's the trick, though, is my vision of the perfect director only works with my vision of the perfect actor. If the actor is only out for himself, if the actor is only pursuing some kind of psychological internal journey or some biography that he or she made backstage, then we do need a really strong director to slap them across the head and say, what the hell are you doing? Get back to the play. I'm not interested in Hamlet's last name. I'm not interested in Ophelia when she was five. You know what I mean? Let's just do the play.
Well, you know, when Ophelia was dying, Gertrude did nothing to stop it. Why? Why did Gertrude do nothing to stop the death of Ophelia? She has to make that decision for herself.
No, she doesn't. That's, you know, I get into trouble with directors. I get into trouble sometimes because people, they want to know why. And I'm not always interested in why. I'm interested in how.
But you get, come on, you get a little crazy here. I mean, you like even reject the notion of an actor having an objective. Like, you get all like, what do you mean objective? Like, well, what's the objective of the play? Like, I mean, even that term bothers you.
No, it doesn't bother me. Because, well, one, I'll say that I don't think playwrights write intentions. Playwrights write drama. Playwrights write conflict.
Okay, but conflict is created by two opposing forces.
Exactly.
I want something from you, you want something from me, and there's the conflict. So we have to investigate what it is I want from you and vice versa, so we exploit that conflict, and that's why we're seeing a drama.
It depends, though, because I think you have to always go to the play and not always go to the characters. And that's it's a slippery slope, because I could justify playing Hamlet for 2.5 hours and say something like, you know, Hamlet only wants to have his 13th birthday party back because something awful happened. I mean, I could go through the whole goddamn play and justify that scene by scene somehow in some loony actor's head. I could do that. But what he ought to be working on is how to make this juicy, how to turn up the heat on all these scenes, how to make conflict, how to make drama. You know, if drama's about conflict and conflict is, as you said, about opposing forces, which part am I? Which part of the force am I? Am I pulling in the scene or am I pushing in the scene? But that doesn't mean I have to get all psychological about it. You know, and I say this, you know, admittedly coming from a place of, I do a lot of classical plays. You know, I'm not doing a ton of new plays, although I'm about to start one next week. So the classics are written much better, frankly.
Well, Demetrius says to Helena, I love thee not, therefore pursue me not.
Yeah.
Where is Lysander and fair Hermia, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I think Demetrius has a clear objective. He wants Helena to leave him the hell alone.
Yeah.
And that's based on the text, no? In it Shakespeare, is. And it's it classical.
Is. Yeah, but the thing is, Demetrius says it, so you don't have to necessarily think it and feel it.
So you're not just creating the supposed objective out of thin air. You're basing it on the words written.
Yeah, I mean, the audience gets it because you say it.
Right.
You know, and I think there's something to that. And, you know, like I said, in film, TV, I think you do have to have a lot going on behind the eyes, meaning that you've got to be thinking character thoughts. I think, you know, I'm not terribly good at film or TV yet, but I think you do have to think those thoughts for the audience to get it. I do think you have to generally feel those things for the audience to feel it. But I don't think that's the case in theater. Any more than, you know, George Seurat has to think and feel a Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grangeotte with every dot he paints. I think he is very, very specifically, intentionally crafting each single dot that when you step back and look at it, now you've got a Sunday in the park. But I don't think he has to feel every single dot. He'd go crazy.
Do you have any advice for young actors, possibly students, who are trying to, you know, break into this career, who might be graduating from BFA programs, conservatories? Do you have any?
Yeah, there's one thing in particular that comes up right away when you ask me that, because it's something I've noticed in the last couple of years. When I get this, I'm going to sound like an old veteran. When I came into the biz, you know, the year I consider my first year as a professional actor was 1992. When I came into it, people didn't really have a lot of cell phones. People were just starting to use pagers a lot, whatever. So their focus in the rehearsal room was in the rehearsal room. And young actors watched and listened to older actors. I'd be sitting there watching and listening to the guy playing Leontes. I'm not playing Leontes today. I'm playing the servant. Has a couple lines. That's what I'm doing today. But I'm watching how he does Leontes. I'm watching I Have Drunk and Seen the Spider. You know, I hope I'm not paraphrasing that. you watched, you listened. Now, people in the rehearsal room are on their cell phones. They're on Facebook. They're flipping through. They're not learning. That may be okay for the older guys in the room, it's still not a great thing to do in the room, so say I. But for young people, if you're not watching, if you're not listening, man, how are you going to get better?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things I want to comment on which, with what you just said. One is rehearsal etiquette. It drives me crazy when you are rehearsing a scene and there's somebody in a corner even reading a newspaper or doing a crossword puzzle. I think if you're in the rehearsal room, your attention is on the work that's being created. And if you're not being used, I don't mind you leaving the room. But I think if you're there, you should be supporting what's happening in that rehearsal space. And the second thing is it blows my mind. Sometimes, you know, I teach at Adelphi University and at AMDA in New York. And I'll talk to a student about possibly going to the New York Performing Arts Library to see old productions and see some great actors and performances. And sometimes every 1 out of 10 times I'll get the response of, well, I don't want to see it. I want to do my own thing. And to me, you know, I respect you wanting to have your own idea, but at the same time, you have to soak up information. And why are you rejecting the knowledge of the great people before you who have done this role? You don't need to copy them, but you can certainly learn from other great actors before you.
I tend to agree. You know, if I'm a young point guard, I'm not going to say, don't show me films of Jordan and Steve Nash. I don't want to know what they did.
You
know,
you study the tapes, see what they've done.
See what they do, And especially in theater, because we are such a film TV culture, a film TV country. You know, you ask a young actor in a high school somewhere, who are the great stage actors right now? They don't know. They could guess. Maybe they'd say like, oh, Liev Schreiber? You know, they'd guess because they heard he also did a play. We don't have any greats to look up to. Because if we think they're any good, we throw them into film and TV, and then the money is irresistible. I wish I could go back and watch the Lunts, you know, on stage. I wish I could go back and see the Marx Brothers on stage. I'd love to see that stuff. because even their work, the Lunts or the Marx Brothers, has been slapped onto the film, and we're not really getting what they were doing.
Any other pointers or advice you might have?
Just because I was just thinking about the Lunts, rent or just buy The Guardsman. I think it's the only film we have of them together. It's remarkable. I sat down to watch this because a great old movement master director of mine, Jewel Walker, who's taught tons of people over the years, just two that pop into my head, like Ted Danson, he was just talking about, and Cherry Jones, you know. I mean, he's taught everyone. But
is she a movie actress?
She is now. You know, he sat down and had me watch it one day because I went to his house. And it's shocking. I thought I was going to see this grainy old black and white with this grainy old overacting. And it's terrific. It's hilarious. It's charismatic. It feels so modern, what they did. And this movie is, I don't know how old it is. But it's amazing. Check that out, just because everyone should see The Lunts at least once. I would just say, young actors, just pay attention, man. I in the last couple of years, I've been playing, lucky to play some Shakespeare leads and other things like that. And I have some understudies, and the understudies were scarcely in the room, you know. So what are you going to learn? I'm not saying I'm God's greatest gift to this or that role, but, you know, learn. Learn by what I'm doing, or learn by what I'm not doing. If I'm doing something that's no damn good, what would you do to make it better? You're just not going to learn any of that stuff if you're not in the room.
Jeffrey, this has been awesome to talk to you. Thank you so much. Just to wrap up, is there anything that you're doing this week or this month to get better at what you do?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm back in the city for only a week, unfortunately. I'm off to do another play a week from now. But, yeah, so this week, you know, I'm going to jump in. I'm doing a reading of The Seagull at the Pearl, a new adaptation from what I think is a pretty exciting young playwright actor called Michael Raver. He did a nice production, his adaptation of The Portrait of Dorian Gray for Sonnet Repertory Theater. And he's just he's a nice, talented young guy. So I'm going to do a reading of his Seagull at the Pearl this week, and then I'll have to fly away. But then I'll have a month off back in New York City. Love to book some small TV or film thing, and then I'll be off to play Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream for Lake Tahoe Shakespeare Festival.
Jeffrey C. Hawkins, thank you again, my friend.
Thank you.